Welcome to a muzzle chat, potentially for the last time right here on TikTok. Why? Well, they're threatening us. Apparently, they don't like the content we're coming out with. They want to control narratives. There's truthful information they don't want you to know. That tells me one thing. They fear you. The few fear the many. And no, I believe this to be far bigger than just China ran app. This to me, and the level of tyranny and topics and censorship that we've dealt with directly here, more so falls under like anything that goes, like we're putting out that goes against like the globalist agenda, like the whole new world order. So I'll leave it up to you guys. But I really wish I could drive this nail home and articulate it well enough and do it justice on how freaking important it is to source information in a information age. It is absolutely crucial. Let there be a silver lining to the pandemic we just went through. We could see, let's acknowledge how they were able to perpetuate and have the most insane effects on the masses due to controlling the narrative. They got away with so much. It's like they learned a lot. That's why they're ramping up and they're trying tooth and nail to stomp out stuff like this. And it's wild because here on a muzzled chat, we're trying to walk that fine line. It goes against our core value. We're to fight against censorship, and the worst type of censorship, self-censorship. And so many people on this app aren't willing, when they get their strike, to continue to push that envelope because they don't want to lose out on their platform. But that goes against our core values. So we're going to continually do that. So it's just a matter of time. We're going to be pulled down. But hey, it's okay. We're going to continue. We'll fire up another one. But if any of this speaks to you and you can see and acknowledge what's going on, please come to Rumble. Support us. That's the main platform we're trying to kick off. Now, we are on X. We are on Telegram, True Social, Instagram, Facebook. But Rumble is an amazing hub, and it's free. And if you could follow us on there, we have all the links where you can connect us with on every single episode. So when the TikTok gets taken down and we kick off a new one, we'll update that link. So you could follow us yet again there on TikTok. I just want to sound the alarm to my brothers and sisters because I care about you so much and I love you and I want the best for you. I want the best for all of us. And I know it's going to take us all uniting and seeking to get to the bottom of things and truth and not allowing tyranny and the infringement on our God-given right to free speech allow us to be wrong. That's how we actually find out what's even truthful and right, and so we can move the needle in the right direction to what is, in fact, going to be most beneficial, not just for ourselves, but our societies and nations and the world as we know it. That's the only way. It is extremely dangerous what they're doing. Let's not allow them to control the masses through mass manipulation and everything. Like what hypocrites? They're gaslighting. They're projecting everything on others that they themselves are doing. They are the propagandists and the misinformation pushers. They are the ones that are, in fact, causing egregious harm. Let's not allow them to get away with it. There's loopholes. There's ways we can work around. Guys, God bless you. I know you're smarter than they think you are. Prove it to them. Let's show them. Look forward to seeing you there. Look forward to seeing you here as long as it lasts, and look forward to seeing you on the new whatever TikTok account we create when this one blows up entirely. God, what a world we live in, right? God bless you. See you soon. All right. Oh, what do you think about that kind of different intro there? Bringing in the TikTok. I mean, my gosh, what an experience this has been, getting on all these different social media platforms and trying to sound the alarm and bring people into the fold of sourcing information, getting truth. Evil has been very effective, and I meant it. Like, that pandemic is, it's a beautiful opportunity for us to see all the dangers. I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I got a neighbor over here that's having some sort of siesta, and bass is popping. I can hear the music, and I don't know what it is. I get really distracted with that sort of thing. So bear with me. I'm going to do my best. But even in that clip, you know, I'm really trying to do this topic justice, because if we lose our free speech, and they're effective on, like, tyrannically controlling, especially in the digital space, we're in trouble. We are in big trouble. The pandemic alone shows us with how they egregiously, like, slandered things that gravely benefited our health, diminished that, and pedestaled things that now clearly are killing people. They can influence elections through information. 100%. They can indoctrinate our children. They could pit us against each other. They could do so many things. So we got a clean house on a lot of that. So I'd like to take a moment and just show gratitude for Rumble. I am so grateful for Rumble. True Social. Even X. It's been liberated to a huge extent, and that is a grave blessing. We need to take over more of them. Like Facebook, YouTube, TikTok. Help us do that. We all have more power than we all know. And you can see that through even just our dollar bills with companies tanking that go against our morals and values. Wow. Neighbor's music is intense. All right. Well, it's no secret. So the whole reason, like, I'm kicking all this off is, like, I'm legit. I have the warning right here. And I have 9 videos that have been pulled down off of TikTok. 9 of them. How did we go from fighting a... And it's... They got all sorts of different labels on them all. Removed for integrity and authenticity. Who's sitting in that judgment seat? They can... That's so vague. It's essentially anything that goes against exposing. It's bigger than just China, like I was stating in that clip. Because as far as the topics and the content I've been exposing on there and YouTube that has in fact been censored and given me strikes and warnings and threats, are topics like God, though, even the Word of God, because there's a video to this day that was taken down, and I was speaking out on how our dollar bills, and this is direct, our tax dollars are being used for child sex trafficking. That is indisputable fact. And we've played the clips, and we could bring those receipts again. But with that phrase, I read from the Bible, essentially the verse regarding anyone that harms these littles is better off with a millstone tied around their neck and dropped in the depths of the sea. That was flagged as hateful ideology and taken down. So I actually snipped that clip out of that video, and lo and behold, it's still up. So they exclusively censored God's word. And that blows my mind. But it's more than that. They censor health. I mean, it's anything and everything. They, to this day, don't want to accept accountability or responsibility in getting things wrong regarding the COVID jab. So they're fighting. I mean, and who knows what else? It's anything clearly that is going to enrich them, enrich Big Pharma or their ties or political. I mean, it's just a network of corruption. Politics, same thing. You go against the grain, you could state facts, stats, graphs, studies, even personal stories. It's basically, like I stated, anything that goes against the globalists' agenda, the New World Order, the WHO, the WEF, World Economic Forum, the UN, all this kind of equals the Rothschilds' bloodline and others. So some of the tools they've been used to manipulate, gaslight, socially condition, even MK Ultra, which is like mass psychosis. We've said it before, it's the bullhorn, it's the war machine known as mainstream media. It's social media platforms, it's even AI programs, teams, and really big, like, not just millions, there's billions of dollars that go into the whole censorship regime. I mean, Google is huge on manipulation and controlling information in a huge way. Even our cellular providers now. The new user agreement, we need to pull that up from AT&T as to how they, in their new user agreement, are going to stop the spread of like misinformation. It's so dangerous, folks. Let's take a look. I mean, even from how they silence people, the way they've now manipulated people is a huge threat. Keeping them from speaking out, it's like that self-censorship. And it's hard to even grasp all the arenas and areas that this is playing out in our lives and in our society. But it's clearly in our schools. It's in our workplace. I mean, think about it. They're part of getting so many of our corporations and big business is getting coerced or has federal funding or something. Their CEOs are bought out and they become part of the whole agenda. So they get the DEI shenanigans, anti-white training protocols, like Alphabet Mafia friendly. You know, just all sorts of things. And people don't want to lose their job. So they self-censor. And they don't stand up. It's sick, but that's a huge part of the problem. And we need to find more. There's amazing companies out there. You lose your job. Golly. They'd even be more on the side of hiring you with that story. And if it is, please shoot us an email. I'd love to have you on and just blast that story. We got to get that company out there. Great blessing would come to those, guaranteed. Doesn't mean it's not going to pose its challenges. I'm sure it will. But if we're not being challenged in that regard, we're not doing our part. It's just the truth. We're not to take the easiest road, like cowardice road in this life. Where's the fun in that? So not just workplace. You see this in church. A lot of people in church, and they're too cowardice to even approach a pastor that might have drank some woke Kool-Aid or something. It's important. Same thing. It's like, oh, what, you don't want to have to shop for a new church? It's in the long term going to be a great blessing to you and your family and maybe others in that church. Could even strengthen your relations and your resolve and so many amazing things. Family gatherings, self-censor in that. There's all sorts of events. I mean, you name it. Well, I was researching, I mean, lots more on this topic, I'm sure, in the future. But it's just wild. All of you, if you could blow up Rumble even more, sound the alarm, because I mean, going into this year is so crucial. They're gonna ramp it up. They even go over, so Tucker has this, I don't know, this guy that's really done a lot of research on all this, and he brings the receipts and he has the sourcing, so it's all factual and things for all of us to look into. But it's insane, the whole, what can we say, the whole machine, the whole industry that has been created behind the scenes, just trying to like control the information. It's wild. It's a lot bigger than we all, I feel, at this point could even grasp. So it's just imperative we push as hard, like we do what we can in our own unique, special, gifted ways to sound the alarm and get people onto platforms like Rumble. By the way, I think we broke 1,000 followers today. I'm so grateful to all of you. It's been a painful process, but that's a huge milestone, and we're growing and we're having an impact, and it's all thanks to you. So thank you. You may not see it on your end because we still don't have that large of engagement. But I've gotten some awesome feedback. It's actually pretty cool. With that, this is kind of off a whim. Share some stats I was looking at the other day. Just an FYI. And now this is on Podbean, my hosting site. So just in the podcast app realm, we've expanded out a Muzzle Chat to 18 different countries, maybe more, because this is a few days old. 18 different countries, 34 of the states right here in the USA. We got active listeners. We have over 54,000 views on Rumble. It says nearly 1,000 followers, but yeah. Pretty sure we just broke that. Let me refresh and see. Oh yeah, it says 1K. Thank you guys. And we're over 136 episodes now. How freaking cool. What a blessing. What a fun adventure. I can't imagine doing anything else. And I know the best is yet to come. So without further ado, let's dive in. Because they highlight a lot of what is going on behind the scenes. And it's pretty powerful stuff. So notated a few times. Now, the whole interview here is an hour and 5 minutes. It's in its entirety. And I kind of got a bit selective here. I hope I don't run a little too long with it. But yeah, let's go ahead and dive in.
The defining fact of the United States is freedom of speech. To the extent this country is actually exceptional, it's because we have the First Amendment to the Bill of Rights. We have freedom of conscience. We can say what we really think. There's no hate speech exception to that. Just because you hate what somebody else thinks, you cannot force that person to be quiet because we're citizens, not slaves. But that right, that foundational right that makes this country what it is, that right from which all other rights flow, is going away at high speed in the face of censorship. Now, modern censorship bears no resemblance to previous censorship regimes in previous countries in previous eras. Our censorship is affected on the basis of fights against disinformation and malinformation. And the key thing to know about these is they're everywhere. And of course, they have no reference at all to whether what you're saying is true or not. In other words, you can say something that is factually accurate and consistent with your own conscience. And in previous versions of America, you had an absolute right to say those things. But because someone doesn't like them or because they're inconvenient to whatever plan the people in power have, they can be denounced as disinformation. And you can be stripped of your right to express them, either in person or online. In fact, expressing these things can become a criminal act, and is. And it's important to know, by the way, that this is not just the private sector doing this. These efforts are being directed by the U.S. government, which you pay for and at least theoretically own. It's your government. But they're stripping your rights at very high speed. Most people understand this intuitively, but they don't know how it happens. How does censorship happen? What are the mechanics of it? Mike Benz is, we can say with some confidence, expert in the world on how this happens. Mike Benz had the cyber portfolio at the State Department. He's now executive director of Foundation for Freedom Online. And we're going to have a conversation with him about a very specific kind of censorship. By the way, can't recommend strongly enough, if you want to know how this happens, Mike Benz, B-E-N-Z, is the man to read. But today we just want to talk about a specific kind of censorship, and that censorship that emanates from the fabled military-industrial complex, from our defense industry and the foreign policy establishment in Washington. That's significant now because we're on the cusp of a global war, and so you can expect censorship to increase dramatically. And so with that, here is Mike Benz, Executive Director of Foundation for Freedom Online. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. And
Guys, let me know if this is running a little too fast or if I'm impeding. I'm at 1.5, so I've sped them up a bit. But if that complicates things again because you want to listen to the whole episode, which once again, I can't even listen to myself at normal speed. It's got to be 1.5. But if that is impeding on listening and you want me to slow these down, I'm going to continue to play them quicker until some people are like, look, you're making it too inconvenient just to listen to the whole thing in its entirety at 1.5. At that point, I'll just painfully sit here through and we'll keep it normal speed all the way through. That way you can put it whatever speed you want and it should be, you should be good to go. And I want to take a second to thank you, Tucker. You're a freaking stud. So much as to what you're doing. And the ridicule and the backlash and everything you faced. We appreciate you. Keep up the good work.
And I just can't overstate to our audience how exhaustive and comprehensive your knowledge is on this topic. It's almost unbelievable. And so if you could just walk us through how the foreign policy establishment and defense contractors and DOD and just the whole cluster, the constellation of defense-related publicly funded institutions strip from us our freedom of speech.
Sure. You know, one of the easiest ways to actually start the story is really with the story of internet freedom. And it switched from internet freedom to internet censorship because free speech on the internet was an instrument of statecraft almost from the outset of the privatization of the internet in 1991. We quickly discovered through the efforts of the Defense Department, the State Department, and our intelligence services that people were using the internet to congregate on blogs and forums, and free speech was championed more than anybody by the Pentagon, the State Department, and our sort of CIA cutout NGO blob architecture as a way to support dissident groups around the world in order to help them overthrow authoritarian governments as they were sort of built. Essentially, the internet free speech allowed kind of instant regime change operations to be able to facilitate the foreign policy establishment's State Department agenda. Google is a great example of this. Google began as a DARPA grant by Larry Page and Sergey Brin when they were Stanford PhDs, and they got their funding as part of a joint CIA-NSA program to chart how, quote, birds of a feather flock together online through search engine aggregation. Mm. And then 1 year later, they launched Google and then became a military contractor quickly thereafter. They got Google Maps by purchasing a CIA satellite software, essentially. And the ability to track, to use free speech on the internet as a way to circumvent state control over media over in places like Central Asia or all around the world was seen as a way to be able to do what used to be done out of CIA station houses or out of embassies or consulates in a way that was totally turbocharged. And all of the internet free speech technology was initially created by our national security state. VPNs, virtual private networks, to hide your IP address. Tor, the dark web, to be able to buy and sell goods anonymously. End-to-end encrypted chats. All of these things were created initially as DARPA projects or as joint CIA-NSA projects to be able to help intelligence-backed groups to overthrow governments that were causing a problem to the Clinton administration or the Bush administration or the Obama administration. And this plan worked magically from about 1991 until about 2014 when there began to be an about-face on internet freedom and its utility. Now, the high watermark of the sort of internet free speech moment was the Arab Spring in 2011, 2012, when you had this one by one, all of the adversary governments of the Obama administration, Egypt, Tunisia, all began to be toppled in Facebook revolutions and Twitter revolutions. And you had the State Department working very closely with the social media companies to be able to keep social media online during those periods. There was a famous phone call from Google's Jared Cohen to Twitter to not do their scheduled maintenance so that the preferred opposition group in Iran would be able to use Twitter to win that election. So it was free speech was an instrument of statecraft from the national security state to begin with. All of that architecture, all the NGOs, the relationships between the tech companies and the national security state had been long established for freedom. In 2014, after the coup in Ukraine, there was an unexpected counter coup where Crimea and the Donbass broke away. And they broke away with essentially a military backstop that NATO was highly unprepared for at the time. They had one last Hail Mary chance, which was the Crimea annexation vote in 2014. And when the hearts and minds of the people of Crimea voted to join the Russian Federation, that was the last straw for the concept of free speech on the internet in the eyes of NATO. As they saw it, the fundamental nature of war changed at that moment. And NATO at that point declared something that they first called the Gerasimov Doctrine, which is named after this Russian military general who they claimed made a speech that the fundamental nature of war has changed. You don't need to win military skirmishes to take over Central and Eastern Europe. All you need to do is control the media and the social media ecosystem, because that's what controls elections. And if you simply get the right administration into power, they control the military. So it's infinitely cheaper than conducting a military war to simply conduct an organized political influence operation over social media. Wow. And legacy media. An industry had been created that spanned the Pentagon, the British Ministry of Defense, and Brussels into a organized political warfare outfit, essentially infrastructure that was created.
Wow. Cheaper than war. To have similar outcomes of actual war tactics and taking over countries and infiltrating countries. Can we kind of connect that dot as to like what has happened here? We no longer have hold of the reins. It's not governed by the people of the people. We got to fix that. That's up to us. How bad do we value our freedoms? How bad do we want them back? I'm willing to do whatever it takes.
Where we basically overthrow governments in order to preserve democracy. Well, if the democracy threat is homegrown now, then that becomes, then suddenly these people all have new jobs moving on the U.S. side. And I can go through a million examples of that. But one thing on what you just mentioned, which is that, you know, from their perspective, they just weren't ready for the internet. 2016 was really the first time that social media had reached such maturity that it began to eclipse legacy media. I mean, this was a long time coming. I think folks saw this building from 2006 through 2016. You know, Internet 1.0 didn't even have social media. From 1991 right. to 2004, there was no social media at all. 2004, Facebook came out. 2005, Twitter. 2006, YouTube. 2007, the smartphone. Mm. And so, and in that initial period of social media, nobody was getting subscriberships at the level where they actually competed mm-hmm. with legacy news media. But over the course of being, you know, so initially, even these dissident voices within within the U.S. Even though they may have been loud in moments, they never reached 30 million followers. They never reached, you know, a billion impressions a year type thing. As a uncensored, mature ecosystem allowed citizen journalists and independent voices to be able to outcompete legacy news media, this induced a massive crisis both in our military and in our State Department and intelligence services. I'll give a great example of this. In 2019, at a meeting of the German Marshall Fund, which is, you know, an institution that goes back to the U.S., I don't want to say bribe, but essentially the soft power, economic soft power projection in Europe as part of the reconstruction of European governments after World War II, to be able to essentially pay them with Marshall Fund dollars, and then in return they basically were under our thumb in terms of how they reconstructed. But the German Marshall Fund held a meeting in 2019, they held a million of these, frankly, but where a four-star general got up on the panel and said that what happens, he posed the question, what happens to the U.S. military, what happens to the national security state when the New York Times is reduced to a medium-sized Facebook page? And he posed this thought experiment as an example of we've had these gatekeepers, we've had these bumper cars on democracy in the form of a century-old relationship with legacy media institutions. I mean, our mainstream media is not in any shape or form, even from its outset, independent from the national security state, from the State Department, from the War Department. You had the initial, all of the initial broadcast news companies, NBC, ABC, and CBS, were all created by Office of War Information Veterans from the War Department's effort in World War II. You had these Operation Mockingbird relationships from the 1950s to the 1970s. Those continued through the use of the National Endowment for Democracy and the privatization of intelligence capacities in the 1980s under Reagan. There's all sorts of CIA reading room memos you can read even on CIA.gov about those continued media relations throughout the 1990s. And so you always had this backdoor relationship between the Washington Post, the New York Times, and all of the major broadcast media corporations. And by the way, you know, Rupert Murdoch and Fox are part of this as well. You know, Rupert Murdoch was actually part of the National Endowment for Democracy Coalition in 1983 when it was formed as a way to do CIA operations in an above-board way after the Democrats were so ticked off at the CIA for manipulating student movements in the 1970s. But essentially, there was no CIA intermediary to random citizen journalist accounts. There was no Pentagon backstop. You couldn't get a story killed. You couldn't have this favors for favors relationship. You couldn't promise access to some random person with 700,000 followers who's got an opinion on Syrian gas. And so this induced, and this was not a problem for the initial period of social media from 2006 to 2014, because there were never dissident groups that were big enough to be able to have a mature enough ecosystem on their own. And all of the victories on social media had gone in the way of where the money was, which was.
Is that making sense? I already listened, so I won't lie. If I catch myself like tuning out a bit, but it's wild. Like, we weren't a threat because they still had their bullhorn that was more valued and more listened to, but it started shifting. So that's when it was like, oh gosh, we're losing control of a very important tool they value. And it's way bigger than just, I mean, it's no secret as to why they value it. It's insane control. Shoot, we've even played clips where the Rothschilds had thanked, like, the New York Times and all these outlets that they couldn't have done what they were able to do without it. Kind of starting to make sense. What's going on here? It's crazy.
Just from the State Department and the Defense Department and the intelligence services. But then as that maturity happened, You now had this situation after the 2016 election where they said, okay, now the entire international order might come undone. 70 years of unified foreign policy from Truman until Trump are now about to be broken. And we need the same analog control systems we had to be able to put bumper cars on bad stories or bad political movements through legacy media relationships and contacts, we now need to establish and consolidate within the social media companies. And the initial predicate for that was Russiagate, but then after Russiagate died and they used a simple democracy promotion predicate, then it gave rise to this multi-billion dollar censorship industry that joins together the military-industrial complex, the government, the private sector, the civil society organizations, and then this vast cobweb of media allies and professional fact-checker groups that serve as this sort of sentinel class that surveys everywhere on the internet.
Unbelievable.
So, can you give us, and thank you again for this almost unbelievable explanation of why this is happening. Can you give us an example of how it happens? How, just pick one among, I know, countless examples of how the national security state lies to the population, censors the truth in real life.
Yeah, so, you know, we have this State Department outfit called the Global Engagement Center, which was created by a guy named Rick Stengel, who described himself as Obama's propagandist in chief. He was the Undersecretary for Public Affairs, which is essentially the liaison office role between the State Department and the mainstream media. So this is basically the exact nexus where government talking points about war or about diplomacy or statecraft get synchronized with mainstream media.
May I add something to that? I know Rick Stengel. He was at one point a journalist, and Rick Stengel has made public arguments against the First Amendment and against free speech. And so
he wrote a whole book on it. And he published an op-ed in 2019. He wrote a whole book on it, and he made the argument that we just went over here, that essentially the Constitution was not prepared for the internet, and we need to get rid of the First Amendment accordingly. And he described himself as a free speech absolutist when he was the managing editor of Time magazine.
Over our dead bodies. It's the attitude we need.
And even when he was in the State Department under Obama, he started something called the Global Engagement Center, which was the first government censorship operation within the federal government. But it was foreign facing, so it was okay. Now, at the time, they used the homegrown ISIS predicate threat for this. And so it was very hard to argue against the idea of the State Department having this formal coordination partnership with every major tech platform in the U.S. because the idea at the time there were these ISIS attacks that were, and we were told.
It's crazy. Getting behind some of it here. Let's jump a little ahead here into some more meat.
Was if they deployed artificial intelligence-based censorship technologies, which had been, again, created by DARPA to take on ISIS, to be able to scan and ban speech automatically. And this was I call these weapons of mass deletion. These are essentially the ability to censor tens of millions of posts with just a few lines of code. And the way this is done is by aggregating. Basically, the field of censorship science fuses together two disparate groups of study, if you will. There's the sort of political and social scientists who are the sort of thought leaders of what should be censored. And then there are the sort of quants, if you will. These are the programmers, the computational data scientists, computational linguistics. Every university, there's over 60 universities.
Isn't it sad that this isn't all the infrastructure hasn't come about to our benefit? How cool would it be? Why is it all biased? One, you can see. Well, because good doesn't act that way. Good allows evil. Good allows people to be wrong. To an extent, right? At the point, evil is directly negatively impacting or threatening. I mean, even they're getting away with that. Mass genocide. But ideally, right, like, we'll hold them accountable, you get locked up, like, you can't go around murdering people type of thing, but golly, that's why evil just doesn't fight fair, do they? They'll do the things we won't do, and they'll freaking project the very things they're doing as if we're doing those things. What a freaking mess, right? Kind of a conundrum. How do you say?
Universities now who get federal government grants to do this censorship, the censorship work and the censorship preparation work. Where what they do is they create these code books of the language that people use. The same way they did for ISIS, they did this, for example, with COVID. They created these COVID lexicons of what dissident groups were saying about mandates, about masks, about vaccines, about high profile individuals like Tony Fauci or Peter Daszak or any of these other protected VIP individuals whose reputations had to be protected on.
And it worked so well. So many people turned into mask Nazis. Because the information and the science and the facts, because this censorship regime was so effective on like holding the real science from these individuals, and it polarized and weaponized them, words and this ideology so heavily. And my heart goes out to, if you were a mask Nazi, like we forgive you. But discernment and critical thinking in your gut and see past the tyrannical BS never again and see how you were manipulated. My heart goes out to you. There's empathy. There were war tactics effectively done on the masses. And that, once again, it's highlighting the level of importance of like abolishing censorship. Free speech is crucial. I mean, if there's ever any message on Muzzle Chat is effective on getting out there, is the importance on censorship. I mean, that is like the foundational stone of even the name and the podcast and everything. All glory to God. But we get muzzled. They would have it that we couldn't even give glory to God.
created these code books. They broke things down into narratives. The Atlanta Council, for example, was a part of this government-funded consortium, something called the Virality Project, which mapped 66 different narratives that dissidents were talking about around COVID, everything from COVID origins to vaccine efficacy. And then they broke down these 66 claims into all the different factual subclaims. And then they plugged these into these essentially machine learning models to be able to have a constant world heat map of what everybody was saying about COVID. And whenever something started to trend that was bad for what the Pentagon wanted or was bad for what Tony Fauci wanted, they were able to take down tens of millions of posts. They did this in the 2020 election with mail-in ballots. It was the same map of what everybody was saying about COVID. And whenever something started to trend that was bad for what the Pentagon wanted or was bad for what Tony Fauci wanted, they were able to take down tens of millions of posts.
We need to sit on that. We saw this play out. And the fact of the matter is, okay, so what they did with Parler, horrific. That's why I'm so grateful we got things to stick like Rumble, and they have their independent servers and abilities to keep things going. But once again, like Barack Hussein Obama on Leave the World Behind, I mean, they project EMP, cyber warfare, all that to combat essentially like a mass awakening and the downfall of America, provoking us into civil war. We can't allow it to be any worse than what it was. But realistically, even going into this new election year, it's like they're gonna ramp it up. It's gonna be effectively done through many of these platforms, hence the, what do we say? I don't want to say pressure, just the importance that we get as many of our brothers and sisters to be like, stop going to ABC Soup News. Stop absorbing everything, whatever, from TikTok or YouTube. Yes, there could be beneficial clips, but it's not going to be remotely as truthful or frequent. And because of that, there will be manipulation. So we got to get more on. And we just got to do our best to express love for these individuals, complimenting them. They're smart. I don't know. Try to get creative and get their thoughts on this podcast. Try to get their thoughts on this episode or from Tucker. We'll add this in its entirety or the link to it in the comment section. But we got to, at minimum, plant a bunch of seeds, right?
They did this in the 2020 election with mail-in ballots. It was the
same.
I'm
sorry. I just got to have to. There's so much here, and it's so shocking. So you're saying the Pentagon, our Pentagon, the U.S. Department of Defense, censored Americans during the 2020 election cycle?
Yes, they did this. They did this through the. So there's the two most censored events in human history, I would argue, to date, are the 2020 election and the COVID-19 pandemic. Yes. And I'll explain, how I arrived there. So the 2020 election was determined by mail-in ballots. And I'm not weighing into the substance of whether mail-in ballots were or were not a legitimate or safe and reliable form of voting. That's a completely independent topic from my perspective than the censorship issue one. But the censorship of mail-in ballots is really one of the most extraordinary stories in our American history, I would argue. What happened was you had this plot within the Department of Homeland Security. Now, this gets back to what we were talking about with the State Department's Global Engagement Center. You had this group within the Atlanta Council and the foreign policy establishment, which began arguing in 2017 for the need for a permanent domestic censorship government office to serve as a quarterback for what they called a whole society counter-misinformation, counter-disinformation alliance. That just means censorship, the counter-misdisinfo. But their whole society model explicitly proposed that we need every single asset within society to be mobilized in a whole of society effort to stop misinformation online. It was that much of an existential threat to democracy. And so, but they fixated in 2017 that it had to be centered within the government, because only the government would have the clout and the coercive threat powers and the perceived authority to be able to tell the social media companies what to do, to be able to summon a government-funded NGO swarm to create that media surround sound, to be able to arm an astroturf army of fact checkers, and to be able to liaise and connect all these different censorship industry actors into a cohesive, unified whole. And the Atlantic Council initially proposed, with this blueprint called Forward Defense — it's not offense, it's Forward Defense, guys — they initially proposed that running this out of the State Department's Global Engagement Center, because they had so many assets there who were so effective at censorship under Rick Stengelstein and under the Obama administration. But they said, we're not going to be able to get away with that because we don't really have a national security predicate, and it's supposed to be foreign-facing. We can't really use that hook unless we have a sort of national security one. Then they contemplated parking it at the CIA, and they said, actually, there's two reasons we can't do that. The CIA is foreign-facing. We can't really establish a counterintelligence threat to bring it home domestically. Also, we're going to need essentially tens of thousands of people involved in this operation, spanning this whole society model. You can't really run a clandestine operation that way. So they said, okay, well, what about the FBI? They said, the FBI would be great. It's domestic. But the problem is the FBI is supposed to be the intelligence arm of the Justice Department, and what we're dealing with here are not acts of lawbreaking. It's basically support for Trump, or if left-wing populists had risen to power like Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn, I have no doubt they would have done, in the UK, they would have done the same thing to him there. They targeted Jeremy Corbyn and other left-wing populist NATO skeptical groups in Europe. But in the US, it was all Trump. And so essentially what they said is, the only other domestic intelligence equity we have in the US besides the FBI is the DHS. So we are going to essentially take the CIA's power to rig and bribe foreign media organizations, which is a power they've had since the day they were born in 1947, and we're going to combine that with the power, with the domestic jurisdiction of the FBI, by putting it at DHS. So DHS was basically deputized, it was empowered through this obscure little cybersecurity agency to have the combined powers that the CIA has abroad with the jurisdiction of the FBI at home. And the way they did this, how did an obscure little cybersecurity agency get this power, was they did a funny little series of switcheroos. So this little thing called CISA — they didn't call it the Disinformation Governance Board, they didn't call it the Censorship Agency, they gave it an obscure little name that no one would notice, called the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, whose founder said, we care about security so much it's in our name twice. And everybody sort of closed their eyes and pretended, that's what it was. But it was created by act of Congress in 2018 because of the perceived threat that Russia had hacked the 2016 election, had physically hacked it, and so we needed the cybersecurity power to be able to deal with that. And essentially, on the heels of a CIA memo on January 6, 2017, and a same-day DHS executive order on January 6, 2017, arguing that Russia had interfered in the 2016 election, and a DHS mandate saying that elections are now critical infrastructure, you had this new power within DHS to say that cybersecurity attacks on elections are now our purview. And then they did two cute things. One, they said dis, and malinformation online are a form of cybersecurity attack. They are a cyber attack because they are happening online. And they said, actually, Russian disinformation is, we're actually protecting democracy and elections. We don't need a Russian predicate after Russiagate died. So just like that, you had the cybersecurity agency be able to legally make the argument that your tweets about mail-in ballots, if you undermine public faith and confidence in them as a legitimate form of voting, you are now conducting a cyber attack on U.S. critical infrastructure by articulating misinformation on Twitter. And just like that, now what they did then is they...
Wait, so in other words, complaining about election fraud is the same as taking down our power grid?
Yes. You could literally be on your toilet seat at 9:30 on a Thursday night and tweet, "I think that mail-in ballots are illegitimate." And you were essentially then caught up in the crosshairs of the Department of Homeland Security classifying you as conducting a cyber attack on U.S. critical infrastructure because you were doing misinformation online in the cyber realm. And misinformation is a cyber attack on democracy when it undermines public faith and confidence in our democratic elections and our democratic institutions. And they would end up going far beyond that. They would actually define democratic institutions as being another thing that was a cybersecurity attack to undermine. And lo and behold, the mainstream media is considered a democratic institution. That would come later. What ended up happening was, in advance of the 2020 election, starting in April of 2020, although this goes back before, you had this essentially never-Trump neocon Republican DHS working with essentially NATO on the national security side and essentially the DNC, if you will, to use DHS as the launching point for a government-coordinated mass censorship campaign spanning every single social media platform on Earth in order to pre-censor the ability to dispute the legitimacy of mail-in ballots. And here's how they did this. They aggregated four different institutions: Stanford University, the University of Washington, a company called Graphica, and the Atlantic Council. Now, all four of these institutions, the centers within them, were
unbelievable. Yeah, it's very broad, deep. I mean, but we're talking, sure, maybe institutions, but institutions that are supposed to be protecting us are being used against us, our tax dollars. We've been way too chillaxed and have allowed this tyranny and over-governing of ourselves that's infringing on all of our amendments. We're an occupied, infiltrated country. What are you going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? Well, trying to assemble all the right things to where we could up our resilience, take on more, especially like us men, but I definitely want to embolden and champion and support our warrior women as well. But there's clearly lots of calls to action. There's endless things we could get involved in and do. And we just need to be excited to do it. That's all it boils down to. This is really good stuff. Let's jump one last bit here. This will be the end of this clip.
Directly after it's done. So I've just got two more questions for you. One short, one a little longer. Short one is, for people who've made it this far, an hour in, and want to know more about this topic, and by the way, I hope you'll come back whenever you have the time to explore different threads of the story. But for people who want to do research on their own, how can your research on this be found on the internet?
Sure. So our foundation is foundationforfreedomonline.com. We publish all manner of reports on every aspect of the censorship industry, from what we talked about with the role of the military-industrial complex and the national security state, to what the universities are doing, to, you know, I sometimes refer to as digital MK Ultra. There's just the field of basically the science of censorship and how and the funding of these psychological manipulation methods in order to nudge people into different belief systems, as they did with COVID, energy and digital. We publish all manner of reports on every aspect of the censorship industry, from what we talked about with the role of the military-industrial complex and the national security state, to what the universities are doing, to, you know, I sometimes refer to as digital MK Ultra.
Digital MK Ultra.
Just the field of basically the science of censorship and how and the funding of these psychological manipulation.
The funding of the psychological manipulation
methods in order to nudge people into different belief systems as they do.
Nudge people into different belief systems. A lot of our thoughts are not our organic thoughts. And it's time we break those on, like, the out of the own box we put ourselves in through our family upbringing, our education, the movies, Hollywood, Disney, everything. It's molded us and put us in like this teeny tiny box. And it's crazy that it's like viewed, oh, going down rabbit holes or whatnot. It's like, break yourself out of the box and just see things as they are. Feel things. Like, and it's beautiful. Like, there's, I just can't wait. I bigger than my own mental box I've been in, it's been like a physical, like, hell, where I just haven't had with Lyme disease in this bioweapon. And I see it with other people too, that seemingly the healthiest among us, but they just, and very successful and financially very well off, but I just don't have the time, like, or the interest, because, like, and it's just like, but you're this brilliant mind. And you can't afford, you got kids too, to not engage, like, because as awesome as your business is, like, what impact is that having on our country and tomorrow? So even all the money in the world, like, isn't really gonna change with the trajectory we're on, securing a future, a life really worth living for your children. It's crazy. We all got to plug in and do our part, but there's something to it. Like, these signals, all the way, like, toxins. Anyway, we've gone over it. Don't mean to get into it all here. Just also want to touch on, just if it's all overwhelming, just know there's breakthroughs to be had, to where you're actually excited to learn more, excited to, wow, have the discussions. And even if it gets controversial, excited to build the resilience in yourself to be like, hey, 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 bringing it back down to calm. Like, I love you. What's going on here? Like, you can have, it's okay. You can have a different view. Can you allow me to have a different view? Like, you might just have a heart attack. Like, what just happened? seek to understand their view and just keep this mutual respect in the conversation and show up with patience. And at the end of that, at minimum, have a seed ready to be, you know, to plant. We could have mega breakthroughs with people day to day. I know it.
With COVID, as they did with energy and every sensitive policy issue is what they essentially had an ambition for. But so my foundation for freedomonline.com wow. website is one way. The other way is just on X. My handle wow. is at Mike Ben Cyber. I'm very active there and publish a lot of long
skip some of this.
I guess sort of corporate regime change through 1,000 on Russia. They ran back that same playbook with doing a roadshow for censorship and trans law with you know something called the EU Digital Services Act. Which was cooked up in tandem with folks like NewsGuard, which is run by, you know, which has a board of Michael Hayden, head of the CIA, NSA, four-star general, CIA, the NSA, four-star law in the EU. And the EU is a bigger market
Sorry,
for X
I'm
than the US.
There's
only 300
bit,
million
folks.
Some people in the US. There's 450 million in Europe. X is now forced to comply with this brand new law that just got ratified this year, where they either need to forfeit 6% of their global annual
in
revenue
Europe.
To EU to maintain operations there, or put in place essentially the kind of you know, CIA bumper cars, if you will,
wow.
that I've been describing over the course of this in order to have an internal mechanism to censor anything that the EU, which is just a proxy for NATO, deems to be disinformation. And you can bet with 65 elections around the globe this year, you can predict every single time what they're going to define disinformation as. So that's the main fight right now is dealing with the transatlantic flank attack from Europe.
I've said this 5 times, but that's just one of the most remarkable stories I've ever heard. And I'm grateful to you for bringing it to us. Mike Benz, Executive Director of the Foundation for Freedom Online. And I hope we see you again.
Wowza. Pretty heavy-hitting stuff, isn't it? And there's way more awesome content like this on Rumble. Okay. Let's dive into this daily scripture. This gentleman. It's pretty cool. We'll kind of end with this. Leviticus 20:26. Let's give this a listen.
Hello, everyone. My name is D1, and my primary occupation is being a man of God. But on the side, I'm a rapper, cool. I'm a public speaker, an author, and a college professor. But I'm here to deliver the verse of the day today, and I love me a straightforward scripture. It's Leviticus chapter 20, verse 26. It says, "You must be holy, because I, the Lord, am holy. I have set you apart from all other people to be my very own." Simply put, ladies and gentlemen, no culture should come before kingdom culture. Our ties to the music of the times and the politics and the social economic status of it all takes a back seat to kingdom culture because we were called to be holy. That means that we should shine our light according to how God wants us to shine it. Not to say, well, I don't want to offend anyone and I don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. That's the problem, is we'll be trying to ingratiate ourselves into the culture that is popular at the moment as opposed to the culture that is present eternally, which is kingdom culture. We just have to simply know and understand that in this scripture, God has called us to be set apart, to be holy, because he is who we represent. So when people be like, oh, who you with? Who that person rolling with? They got to know, oh, that's one of God's children right there. Therefore, since they know that we God's people, our character has to represent the God that we serve. And guess what? We got a lifetime to do it, starting today. Let's get it.
Yes. Lifetime to do it. Starting today. Let's get it. Kingdom culture. We need to stop being concerned with all the here and the now. I mean, regarding the name calling, this and that. We have eternity that's far more important to focus on. This Bible and roadmap, I'm so grateful to Jesus Christ, my Savior, and God for this roadmap. I am more at peace than I've ever been in my life. And I'm diving, trying to get on these front lines. And who knows what's going to come down the pipe. But it, no matter what it is, it doesn't matter. Because having that kingdom, like living that out here in the flesh, like what are they going to do? Send me home early, early? I've felt personally in my life with loved ones in certain situations where when they passed and they were done with their mortal bodies, I felt even more connected with them. I felt their love even stronger than they were able to kind of just emit or resonate in their mortal existence. And there was so much peace and comfort with that. It was just like reassuring and confirming to me that 100%, like eternity, the feeling I felt was like kind of funny, where here we are mourning an immortal, which is kind of getting stemmed, let's be honest, from selfishness, because we miss the individual. We want them selfishly around. But with that feeling of support and love, it's hard to articulate, okay? I'm tripping up here. But it was a profound moment for me where it was like, they're mourning our state. We're in the thick of it. And I found it kind of silly that, why am I mourning this individual and really diving into those feelings? Because I could feel their love anyway. Don't know if you've experienced something like that. But let's put on the armor of God. Let's become warriors for God. Guys, thank you so much for all your support and helping us grow and have a bigger and bigger impact. We need it, and we're just beginning. Let's keep up the good work. Till next time, take care.